recapping the weekend in sports and previewing the week ahead. This is FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Erwig and Corey LeBounty.
Bob, you'll get a real sense of the hatred that makes football so great.
I've got the fever, gambling fever.
What we're dealing with here is a complete lack of respect for the law.
You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
And welcome in, FM Talk 106.5, Sports Night. Dalton Erwig and Corey LeBounty in with you on this Monday night, the last of two Mondays before college football officially begins with Florida taking on Miami in Orlando on August the 24th. Corey, we get not only football, but good football earlier than ever. I believe this is the, actually, I would be believing wrong if I came out and said it, because they've had week zero before. But this is the first time we'll have a week zero with a game that people will probably be tuned into, I'd say at least past the first quarter. Now, whether Florida blows out Miami and ends it before the first half, we'll see. But haven't had a matchup this good for a week zero game so far in college football, and I'm looking forward to it. Florida and Miami in just 13 or is it 12 days from tonight?
You look at it on paper, Dalton, and like you said, when you see that type of matchup, it's the type of matchup that you're looking forward to, that you're intrigued about, that gets you fired up in the offseason, circling that on your calendar, especially as early as the kickoff is. You're really happy that prior to Labor Day weekend, you have some college football to look forward to.
Man, I cannot wait. It is hot out there. I think, you know, earlier on the midday show, Sean Sullivan's Midday Mobile, he was looking at the temperature. I think the heat index got up to 111 today. I don't know if that's as high as it got, but you know the high school players out there working out, the college players that are getting their last reps in before they head into that week one preparation, 111 outside the heat index with the pads on. It doesn't get much hotter than that.
No, I mean, there's nowhere for that heat to go, even though in the NFL they have those cooling systems within their pads that kind of lowers their core temperature down a little bit. The high schoolers are not as lucky, and they're going in full pads. The college guys have a way to cool down as well, but it's just so important for all athletes at any stage or any level to hydrate in all this heat, Dalton.
Well, we got a big show planned for tonight, and I have been looking forward to this show for a little while now. Just about 5 weeks ago, we began our 2019 college football season preview by working our way through each Power 5 conference week by week until tonight. We finally got to the big SEC preview of the 2019 season. And coming up next segment, a special guest who's been on here before to talk some football. We're going to talk with Cole Kublik. You might know him as a radio host with Jocks Radio 94.5 up there in Birmingham. He's on the three-man front every day from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. And you've probably seen his face on your TV with the SEC Network. Cole is a analyst there on the SEC Network and does a great job, just a font of information. And we'll be talking with Cole Kublik coming up this next segment as we begin our 2019 Southeastern Conference preview. Also tonight, we'll talk a little bit of NFL and plenty of big discussions and big talking, big stories that have been all over the news the last week that we'll try to get into. But I want to start the headlines tonight talking a little bit about the NFL preseason. And it's really one of the few times where you get a good crossover of college football talk from last year and NFL talk going into this season. And the schedule worked out pretty perfectly for the first week of preseason last week. With 11 games on Thursday night, we got to see the top three quarterbacks chosen in the 2019 draft in action. And on top of that, Jarrett Stidham got his first taste of NFL action for the New England Patriots. But let's start right there at the very top. The first player chosen in the 2019 draft, Arizona Cardinals, Kyler Murray, went out, played one series with the starters, and looked pretty good, Corey. He completed 6 of 7 passes for 44 yards. Score doesn't really matter in preseason, but it does to some people. Arizona went out and beat the LA Chargers 17-13. But our first real look at Kyler Murray, he looks just as small as he did in college football, but he looks just as athletic and speedy, and that arm, it is a lively arm. He's going to need to use all of those tools to stay away from the rush this year, because that's the way things work. The Arizona Cardinals were the worst team in the NFL last year. Just because they got him first overall doesn't mean they immediately become a top 10 NFL team. So he's going to be running for his life quite a bit. But I liked what I saw out of him on Thursday night. 6 of 7 passes for 44 yards before he called it.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things is as the preseason continues to unwind, he'll continue to get more valuable reps. And I know he's getting the reps at practice, but there's nothing like live bullets coming at you. And having an opportunity to play against an opposing defense who's looking to sack you and put you on the ground and basically hurt you and get you out of the game, you have to be careful with the number of reps. That's why you only see the starters normally sitting out the first game and only playing one series in the second game. But you're exactly right. The shot and the infusion that he's going to give the Cardinals, it's going to be fun to watch him develop as a quarterback and what his decisions are going to be making reading defenses as well.
And we didn't see the full Cliff Kingsbury offense in action either. They weren't doing any hurry up. They were huddling after every play. It is preseason, so they keep it pretty vanilla as far as that goes. This was really interesting. The second quarterback taken off the board, he went 6th overall to the New York Giants. And not just Giants fans, but a lot of people in the football world were saying, what in the heck are the Giants doing? They drafted Duke's Daniel Jones, and he's already trying to make a lot of people eat their words. He started a perfect 5 for 5 Thursday night, threw for 67 yards, and ended his night with a touchdown pass to Benny Fowler and his New York Giants beating the New York Jets 31-22. But if that's how Daniel Jones looks his first preseason game out there, a lot of Giants fans are hoping that he can keep that going, and I'm sure they hope take the job from Eli Manning early this season.
But Dalton, what it does, it just gives you a sense of confidence. Anytime you're out there playing again against a defense that's not your own and you have success, it just gives you that sense of confidence that you're looking for to all the doubters and the naysayers, because you know you hear the noise in the background from outside sources. You hear the outside noise and you just want to prove those people wrong. And again, Eli Manning knows he's going to have to turn over the system at some time sooner or later to Daniel. So with that being said, what better person to learn from Eli? This is Eli's team still, but I think Daniel showed that he's more than capable of being a force to be reckoned with through the first preseason game and did what he showed on tape and playing at Duke that he's capable of.
Then you have the third guy who's going to be linked at the hip to Kyler Murray and Daniel Jones for the entirety of all three of their careers. But former Ohio State quarterback Dwayne Haskins Jr. got a bit more work than the other two quarterbacks because he was not the starter for the Redskins on Thursday night. He ended up playing 6 series and had a bit more of an up and down night. He ended up going 8 for 14 with 117 yards passing, 0 touchdowns, and 2 interceptions as the Redskins lost to the Cleveland Browns 30-10. But the talk from that game on Thursday night was all about dangerous Baker Mayfield, who came out with the Cleveland Browns ones, only played one series. They told the Redskins that they were going to do it, and they ran hurry up that entire first series, and Baker Mayfield ended it with a 24-yard touchdown strike to Rashard Higgins. If they can keep that up, and even without their top two receivers on the field, some guy named Odell Beckham Jr. and another some guy named Jarvis Landry, I think they'll be pretty good if Mayfield can keep that rolling. Then you have former Auburn Tigers quarterback Jarrett Stidham, who got his first taste of NFL action, and he played quite a bit for the Patriots Thursday night, went 14 of 19 for 179 yards and a touchdown, and the Patriots just crushed Detroit 31-3. But I loved seeing Stidham get out there and play as well as he did on Thursday night.
Yeah, I want to piggyback off the Cleveland Browns and another rookie. Mac Wilson had some interceptions that were critical for the Cleveland Browns, and Mac Wilson's playing with a chip on his shoulders because he fell in the draft. He didn't go as high as he wanted to. I think he wound up being a 5th-round draft pick, and some projected him to go anywhere from the 1st round to the 3rd round, and now with him being able to step up and get a pick 6, that was huge for Mac Wilson, and we saw him be able to do that at Alabama, but just being able to get that against another rookie, I think just speaks volumes of the type of competition that Mac Wilson is going to bring to the Cleveland Browns and Freddie Kitchens.
Very cool, and I can't wait to see some of these rookies grow throughout their NFL careers. Before we get to Cole Kublik here this next segment, a couple more headlines to get to with Alabama losing a couple guys that were going to play a major role on the team this year, one probably more than the other, at least to start the year. Running back Trey Sanders, true freshman. I mean, just last week, at the beginning of the week, the articles were rolling out this is what you need to know about Alabama's new five-star freshman. This is how great Trey Sanders is looking out there on the practice field. Then he goes down the very last play of a scrimmage on Thursday night. They determine he has a broken foot, and he's going to miss. He's likely to miss the entire season.
He and Josh McMillan, both the redshirt senior inside linebacker, that's huge. Two losses for the Alabama Crimson Tide. I know bubble wrap is what Nick Saban wants to put around his team. Doesn't want to baby him, but cannot afford any more injuries from a depth standpoint, offensively or defensively. Want to give shout outs to Chris Stewart. He's going to have a bypass surgery. The voice, not sideline voice of the Alabama Crimson Tide, just announced today that he is going to have the bypass surgery for his heart. We know he had a stroke a year ago, so just want to give him our prayers and encouragement as well.
Yeah, seriously. And also somebody who's going to probably want those prayers as he begins his career calling games for the Auburn Tigers. Now, he's done it before, but Auburn made it official today that Andy Burcham will be the replacement for the late Rod Bramlett. Of course, Rod passed away in a car accident earlier this year. It took a while for Auburn to come out and name his replacement, but at least for this year, Andy Burcham, who you've heard on Auburn broadcasts for decades now, he will be stepping into the role formerly held by Rod Bramlett, and that'll begin week one, August the 31st, when Auburn takes on Oregon in Arlington, Texas. And we wish Andy Burcham the best of luck, and I know we'll be talking to him here soon on this station, and hopefully we'll get him on Sports Night over the next couple weeks.
No doubt about it. Auburn Tigers home here on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, coming back, we're talking with Cole Kublik. You know him from Jocks 94.5 in Birmingham. You've probably seen him on the SEC Network as an analyst. And guess what? That's exactly what we're going to talk about. The 2019 SEC Conference Preview coming up right here on Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
Listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
And welcome back in FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Orwig and Corey LeBounty. Don't forget, you can catch the podcast after the show at FMTalk1065.com or subscribe to the FM Talk 106.5 podcasts, iTunes, Stitchers, Google Play. You know the drill. Pretty much everywhere you can get the FM Talk 106.5 podcasts. And a man who has quite a few podcasts, I'm sure, floating around out there on the internet, Cole Kublik from Jocks 94.5 in Birmingham and an analyst on the SEC Network. He's been with us once before on this show, and it is a pleasure to welcome him again to Sports Night as we talk the 2019 SEC season. Cole, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Hey, no problem, guys. Thanks for having me.
So we've been previewing each conference going into the start of the season, coming up two Saturdays from now with Florida taking on Miami to kick off the SEC year. And we're leaving it off with the SEC, and we thought we'd call up the SEC guru, Cole Kublik. So I'm glad you're able to talk with us tonight. But we got to start things with the favorite, the team that everyone expects to see again in the college football playoff this year after I'm sure everyone expects them to play in the SEC championship game, the Alabama Crimson Tide, who had a couple bad bits of news this weekend with running back Trey Sanders going out for the year, and also inside linebacker Josh McMillan, who's been running with the ones. I want to start off the interview asking you this. How does that affect Bama's depth? Do you think that will have a true effect on this season, losing those two guys?
Not so much at running back. I don't think Trey Sanders hurts him as much. I think McMillan might, and I say might because I'm not going to sit here and say that I think that immediately equates to two or three losses for Alabama. But linebacker depth is a concern, and I think even when you look at some of the outside linebackers that we're anticipating are going to have a big role, I mean, they've had some injury history. When you look at Anthony Jennings and Terrell Lewis, so Chris Allen's coming back from an injury. And outside of Dylan Moses, there's just not a lot of proven guys, especially inside, that might be able to help this team if they were to have a couple more guys go out during the course of the season. Now, the good news is you got Raekwon Davis back up front. I think LeBron Ray is going to have a good year. DJ Dale's had a great camp up front. You have a veteran secondary, so you should be able to protect that group no matter how hard you get hit. But I think when we talk about Alabama, we're not talking about them playing Arkansas and Ole Miss. We're talking about when they play Georgia in the SEC championship game and when they play Ohio State, Clemson, Oklahoma, Texas in the college football playoffs. So the linebacker injury is definitely more concerning, but I think with Najee Harris and Brian Robinson back at tailback, I don't anticipate that that's one that should be overly concerning, especially with the quarterback and wide receivers that Alabama returns.
Cole, you have many prognosticators saying that Alabama's going to win the West, Georgia's going to win the East. Who is your favorite going in? And if it's not Alabama and Georgia, what teams do we really need to keep an eye on? Are you looking forward to seeing the most play this season?
I don't know if I'm going to step out and say that I think another team outside of those two are definitively going to be in Atlanta, but I think you have to look at a couple of teams and you say, okay, why could they do it? Why could LSU do it? I think LSU's got the best secondary in college football. I think LSU's got a tough, competitive leader at quarterback, a really good group of wide receivers. And I think they've got enough with Michael Divinity and Rashard Lawrence and Caleb on Chase on back in the front seven that that group could also be formidable. But when you think from a matchup perspective of, okay, if LSU is able to man up Alabama's receivers and be problematic that way, they could be a team that gives them headaches. I think when you look at Auburn, if the quarterback situation works itself out with a very athletic secondary, the best offensive line in college football, a veteran-laced offensive line, a talented group of receivers, they may be a team that could find a way to challenge Alabama late. I think over in the East, it's easy to just say Florida. Felipe Franks, we anticipate, will take that next step, but there are a lot of unknowns on that offensive line, and that's a group that's going to have to grow up quickly if Florida is realistically going to compete in the East. I think defensively, they still have a couple of guys who can attack. They've got some great cover guys on the back end, maybe the best tandem of corners outside of LSU in college football. And I think they have great skill at running back and wide receiver, but I don't know what the depth looks like on the interior of that defensive line and along the offensive line. That could be concerning. I think if there's a surprise team, it'll be Missouri. I really like Missouri's offensive line. They have three offensive linemen that I have rated as top five at their position in the SEC going into this year. Trevor Wallace-Sims at guard, Tristan Colon-Castillo at center. And at tackle, you've got Yasir Durant, who I think is a top five tackle in the SEC. You combine that group that was severely underrated a year ago, along with a 1,000-yard rusher returning in Larry Roundtree, a legit NFL tight end in Albert O, Jalen Knox, a solid wide receiver. And you put Kelly Bryant into that offense where now you can design some things in the quarterback run game that forces defense to defend it. And when I talked to Drew Locke towards the end of last season, we had conversations about just how much Derek Dooley helped him learn conceptual football and how much he helped him understand situational football, not just from down and distance, but where you were on the field, what the score was of the game, what the defense had been giving you that entire game. I think if Kelly Bryant can just take a small step, that Missouri offense is going to be tough to defend, and their schedule lines up perfectly. They get Georgia the first week in November. Granted, it's in Athens, but they're off the week before. They get Florida in mid-November in Como. They have destroyed Florida the last two seasons. And the two teams that they get from the West are Arkansas and Ole Miss. Pretty solid draw. Their non-conference Power 5 team is West Virginia, who obviously has a new coach in Neil Brown and has to replace Will Greer quarterback, David Sills and company at wide receiver, so that'll be a different team. So I love the Missouri schedule. I love the Missouri coaching staff. I love the culture that Barry Odom is building. He hasn't lost a single player to the transfer portal, and it just gives you an idea of sort of what that team's all about. Now, obviously, they'll need to have this postseason ban lifted if they're actually going to get to Atlanta. I anticipate that happens, but I still think Missouri is going to be a team to watch.
Yeah, and some of the players on the team must anticipate that happening too, because like you said, no players leaving through the transfer portal, even after that news came out that they were going to be penalized by the NCAA. So I'm really interested to see how that turns out. But a team in the SEC with pretty much, you were talking about how well Missouri's schedule works out for them this year. Auburn's schedule seems to be maybe the toughest schedule in all of college football. Gus Malzahn still squarely on the hot seat going into this year. Now, of course, he'll be calling the plays on his own. Let's talk about that hot seat, Cole. What do you think it would take this year for the Auburn fans and the Auburn executives there at the school to say, all right, enough's enough. We've had this bad of a year that we'll have to move on from Malzahn. What do you think that water level is there where they say, all right, it's time to cut the cord?
I mean, I don't know what the tipping point would be, and I don't like to put a number on it either. People who say, well, he's got to get to 8, he's got to get to 9. You know, it's what if he gets to 8 and beats Georgia and Alabama? Now, right. I think common sense would tell you that if that's the case and he already has 5 losses going into the Georgia game, he's probably not going to get a chance to coach against Georgia and Alabama. I think that he needs to be competitive in every game, and he needs to show that the direction of the program is heading where the school wants it to be, and that there is growth within his system, in his scheme, there is growth within the team, and that even if there is a close loss or a controversial loss, that the direction of the program is still where everybody thinks it should be and wants it to be. I think you can withstand some losses against that schedule. Like you mentioned, it's extremely difficult. But if things appear to be discombobulated and if there seems to be decisions that are made that are questionable, I think that's when some of those discussions will probably realistically blend. Let's be honest. If we want to talk about hot seat, which I don't really like having that conversation very often, mm-hmm. I think we can just go ahead and say for the rest of Gus Malzahn's tenure at Auburn that some people can just have that conversation from here on out, no matter what he does next year, the next 2 years, the next 3 years, because there is a faction of Auburn supporters that wants him out. And because they've already made that decision, it's probably not going to change. Therefore, it just is what it is. I don't view it as problematic. I think Gus Malzahn knows it. And I think Gus Malzahn also knows, on the flip side of that, he has some powerful people in his corner. So it's going to be a decision that's not going to be an easy one to make. That's why I don't think it'll happen quickly, even if things don't appear to be what most people want them to be.
Have another question for you here. My co-host Dalton Orwig is a huge Tennessee Volunteer fan. Let's talk about Tennessee real quick, bringing in T. Martin and Jim Chaney to kind of give that boost to this Tennessee offense. Well, how do you feel about the Tennessee Volunteers in year number two for Jeremy Pruitt?
Still don't have enough in the trenches to truly be competitive for an entire season, but I'm a big Jim Chaney fan. I think he's a guy that mixes and matches his run scheme as well as anybody in college football. He'll come up with creative ways to allow his team to find success in the run game. I do think Tennessee can be pretty dangerous from specialty positions. When you look at wide receiver and running back, I think they're okay. They have to have Trey Smith. They have to, because he's not only the best offensive lineman they have, he's one of the best in college football, and he's an absolute tone setter. He is someone that the rest of that group needs to see in practice, on film, and be around each and every day just because of the way he plays the game. You're going to start two true freshman tackles. You need some guys who can set the tone in that meeting room on a daily basis, and Trey Smith can be that guy. I think when you talk about the first 11 on defense, it's one that can be competitive, but I'm concerned with depth, especially with the loss of Emmett Gooden, the guy who I thought was going to have a big year for Tennessee this year. Mm-hmm. But I think you have an elite rusher on the end. I think you got a nice linebacker in Batuli, and Nigel Warrior company on the back end can be solid. Year two in that scheme under Jeremy Pruitt, the defense is going to take a big step, I believe. I just don't know if they have the bodies to be competitive for 14 straight weekends, and that includes the bye weeks, obviously. But I don't know if the depth is ready for Tennessee to go win 9-10 games. Are they going to be bowl eligible? I believe so, because they have one of the toughest quarterbacks in college football who's got a ton of talent, and he's got some nice weapons around him. They'll learn how to offset the struggles they have up front, and Jeremy's put together the best staff maybe in college football. So they'll work their way around some of the issues, but they're just not deep enough right now to be able to go win 10, 11, 12 games.
Cole Kublik with Jocks 94.5 in Birmingham. Also, you can find him on the SEC Network as the entire country begins to turn their channel over to that as college football begins. Thank you so much for joining us tonight, Cole.
Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
All right. That's Cole Kublik with Jocks 94.5 in Birmingham, SEC Network. Another good look at a conference going into the season and full of great information. We'll continue to talk about the SEC when we get back right here on Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5. If you want to give us a call or text, 251-343-0106. Also, don't forget right now the time to register for the FM Talk 106.5 College Pick'em Challenge. We did it for the first year last year and had over 180 people competing. We're going to try to beat that number this year. We've already got 30 or 40 people signed up and just under 3 weeks to go to get your name in the hat. But looking forward to another great year of the College Pick'em Challenge, Corey.
And I tell you what, Dalton, I'm even going to get my girlfriend Carletta involved in the Pick'em Challenge as well. Let's see how she can do and see if she can outdo my record and your record in this College Pick'em. So it's always fun week to week to see who's on the leaderboard, because I always click on it as soon as Sunday morning and rolls around to see how I did and to see how everybody else we're competing with does as well.
I don't know much. I just know that I'm going to beat you this year.
There we go. I love the challenge, though. I love the challenge.
All right, we'll be back. More Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5 right after this.
You're listening to FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Orwig and Corey LaBounty. Call the show or text your thoughts to 251-343-0106.
And welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. Dalton Orwig and Corey LeBounty. Thanks again to Cole Kublik from the SEC Network coming on to talk, well, what else? SEC football with us as we are now 12 days away from the very first SEC football game of the year. Florida taking on Miami in Orlando, and Florida favored by a touchdown. That's even after the news that Miami has officially named their starting quarterback. And it wasn't Tate Martell, the guy that so many expected to win the job coming from Ohio State as a transfer. Instead, the new starting quarterback for the Miami Hurricanes, Jaren Williams, who not many people have been talking about in this little quarterback competition they've been having, because you had N'Kozy Perry, who played quite a bit for the Hurricanes last season, and then Tate Martell, who a lot of people thought would just come in and win the job. So instead you have Jaren Williams, who I guess was a pretty highly touted recruit, not one of the top recruits in the nation, but said he was the fifth-ranked pro-style quarterback coming out in his year. I think, this would have been his freshman year coming in. So he was the number 5 pro-style quarterback coming in, number 77 overall recruit in the country, and one of the elite 11 as they get the top 11 high school quarterbacks around the nation to go out and practice. But that's who we will see taking on the Florida Gators and Dan Mullins as he begins his second year in the league. And Florida, Corey, a pretty hot team when people come out and they're trying to pick maybe a dark horse to win the SEC. The Florida Gators is a name that comes out a lot of mouths. They are plus 345 to win the SEC East. That's according to the Vegas numbers, and a hearty 14-1 to win the SEC in total. But we started to see towards the end of last year, and yes, I'm beginning our second part of the SEC preview talking about the Florida Gators, but they towards the end of last year started putting it together at the quarterback position. Now, they went 10-3, a 10-1 season in Mullins' first year with the team, not too shabby. But we really saw Felipe Franks kind of put it together towards the end of last year, even after he got benched at the beginning of the year. And a lot of talk about Dan Mullins being the quarterback whisperer. We saw what he did with Tim Tebow, Dak Prescott, a number of guys that he's turned into good quarterbacks in the NCAA. If he has turned Felipe Franks around, if he has turned Franks' career around for being a nice recruit that came in and didn't do much into a guy that can come in and lead an SEC program to bowl wins and potentially a college football playoff, well, then Mullins is worth every single penny that Florida's paying him.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see what Florida does, because I like the Florida Gators personally, because anytime I look at the roster and you have Mobile, Alabama guys that are playing a pivotal role in the offensive system that coach is running. I mean, you look at Kadarius Toney and LaMichael Pirine, both will get their fair share of touches, especially LaMichael Pirine deciding to come back in that running back position for the Florida Gators. Look for him, hopefully, to have an injury-free senior career and end his career up here in Mobile, Alabama at the Senior Bowl. But we all know what Kadarius Toney can do as well, just a dual threat offensive threat. Mm-hmm. Played the quarterback position at Blount High School, then turns around and had played wide receiver, can play the wildcat position. Really any offensive position on the field he can play for the Florida Gators, giving them that extra dimension of versatility. I just like watching the Florida Gators and root for these Mobile, Alabama guys on that roster.
Now, I've never been a guy to root for the Florida Gators, you know, wearing that Tennessee orange, and I do try to be as impartial as possible. I'm not as much of a fanboy as I used to be. Now that I, you know, watch each team, I watch Alabama and Auburn more than I watch Tennessee anymore, to be honest with you. But it is cool to see some of the local guys get out there, and I mean the speed. We've always talked about the speed of Florida back when Urban Meyer was coaching them, even with Will Muschamp there in town. They've always had speed. And when Dan Mullins has players that he can get his quarterback to throw the ball to, then you know that Florida's going to have a proficient offense. But, man, what a matchup to start the year. Two teams that are on the rise, Florida and Miami, and Miami bringing in the new head coach, Manny Diaz, who's been the defensive coordinator there for a couple years. That should be just a great, great matchup to start the year. But if we're looking at the odds for the entirety of the SEC, you know who the lead dog is. You know who has the marks on their back that everybody's looking at, the bullseye on their back, and that's Alabama. Pretty heavy favorites to win the SEC West by itself. They are minus 350, which would mean you'd have to put up $350 if you wanted to win 100. So pretty good odds for Alabama to win the West, and even to win the entire SEC Conference. They're minus 150, followed closely by Georgia, who is favored to win the SEC East and at 3-1 odds to win the conference as a whole. So odds makers, anyway, expect us to see Alabama and Georgia at the end of the year. But the three teams, maybe even four teams, you really got to look at behind them: Florida, who we just talked about, LSU, who seems to really be putting it together on the recruiting trail under Ed Orgeron, Texas A&M, now entering year two with Jimbo Fisher, and, of course, Auburn, who has probably one of the best defenses in the entire nation, and Gus Malzahn, who's really feeling the heat and needs to win in order to keep his job. Which of those four teams, Corey, do you think could surprise the nation and walk out with an SEC title?
I'm going to say LSU. I mean, they're always that sleeper. Again, Cole Kublik, who was on our show in a segment earlier, mentioned the fact that anytime you have quarterback Joe Burrow coming back, this is a team in LSU that averaged 32.4 points a game a year ago. They only really laid that goose egg when they had to play Alabama. Other than that, you didn't really see them sputter. You're just going to see LSU continuing to improve behind a veteran offensive line and just behind a veteran signal caller now. So if there's a team that I think that you really have to look at, it is the LSU Tigers. Not taking anything away from Texas A&M either, I think that year number two for Jimbo Fisher is going to be brutal as well. But I still say the LSU Tigers, to me, the LSU-Texas A&M matchup is going to be very, very interesting to watch as to who will follow in Alabama's footsteps, possibly.
And that LSU-A&M matchup doesn't come till the very end of the year. That's that last week rivalry game. We'll really see where LSU stands this year going into week two of the year when they play at Texas. Now that will be a matchup. The LSU Tigers playing against the Texas Longhorns in Austin. Can't wait for that game. You know, a team that I think is really underrated this year, they seem to do well when they're underrated and do poorly when they're overrated, and that's the Auburn Tigers. On so many message boards and on Twitter, I've seen, and I assume that a lot of them are Alabama fans, who I realize don't ever want to say a good word about Auburn, but people I've seen expect Auburn to be one of the worst in the SEC. I've seen a lot of talk about that, and I'm not seeing it. The reason I don't see it is just because the defense is so good. Returning Marlon Davidson and returning that D-line there and going up against Oregon the first week against that great offensive line. But Derrick Brown and Marlon Davidson to come back for their senior years and the return of so many defenders behind them, that even if they have a true freshman start at quarterback, or even if Gatewood wins the job as a redshirt freshman, regardless, they're going to have inexperience at quarterback. The best thing you can give an inexperienced quarterback and his coach is a defense that is going to take care of things on the other side of the ball.
I think that will help, and that'll give you a little confidence knowing that you have a Band-Aid if you make a boo-boo if you're the Auburn Tigers offensively, knowing that your defense can kind of cover that up for you. But, you know, one of the things that was interesting is that when you look at Gus Malzahn taking back over the play-calling duties, I think that's important. And you mentioned the situation that the defensive line is one of the strongest, if not the strongest, in the nation. I just think that Gus Malzahn, you know, winning eight or fewer games in four out of his six seasons, I just think that there's a quick hot seat that's going to come no matter throughout the season how Auburn does. Because again, if you're able to beat the Georgias, if you're able to beat the Alabamas, but you come in limping and hurting in that hurting in those games, it's not going to help your cause any. But Auburn, with an inexperienced quarterback, a freshman quarterback, no matter how you look at it, it's going to be quick trial by fire against Oregon.
Yeah, but the game isn't the same as it used to be. We've seen freshman quarterbacks come in and really play well. I mean, just look at Tua and Trevor Lawrence. Both came in and looked outstanding from day one.
And I can speak from seeing Bo Nix in person at Pinson Valley that he's a very special talent. And I think that the lineage he has with his dad, Patrick Nix, also donning that Auburn uniform, I just think it gives him a little extra swagger, and he has a confidence about him. When I saw him at Pinson Valley, he had a confidence about him, and I really like this young man, and I think that he ultimately will do well for the Auburn Tigers offense.
And we haven't seen Malzahn name a starter yet. Going into the first scrimmage of the year last week when they played on Thursday, Malzahn usually said that that first scrimmage is when he has a pretty good idea of who he is going to start at quarterback. But the word coming out after that was that neither quarterback really did much to separate themselves. You did have Bo Nix come out first with the first-team offense, but that didn't really say much because you can't take both of them out there to start on the very first play, and Gatewood got plenty of play with the ones as well. But in the scrimmage Thursday night, just like we've seen reports from practice over the last month or so, is that the defense seems to be looking really, really good, and that can only help those quarterbacks as they practice and get ready to lead the team.
Yeah, but one of the biggest questions for the Auburn offense is the injury to Anthony Schwartz.
Yeah.
The dynamic wide receiver, getting his hand maybe out of a cast in time for the Oregon game, probably a game time decision possibly for them. So, you know, having one of those weapons taken away from you as an offensive signal caller is big for the Auburn Tigers also.
And Eli Stove, he went out with a knee dinger. He was only supposed to miss a couple days, but you don't want injuries to the receiver room this close to the beginning of the season. And fans won't give him a pass, but we can say it now before the year starts. That schedule is just absolutely brutal if you look at Auburn's schedule. I mean, just to begin the year against a top 10 team in Oregon on the road in Arlington, then they have a couple games they should win pretty easily, Tulane and Kent State. But then they're right back on the road to play at Texas A&M. And then after that, Mississippi State at home, then at Florida before their first real bye of the year. Then you got another run of teams at Arkansas, which shouldn't be too much of a problem, at LSU, which should be a problem, and then Ole Miss at home before they end the year with Georgia, Samford, and Alabama. So just looking at their schedule, Bama to end the year, Georgia just before that, at LSU, at Florida, at Texas A&M, and Oregon on the road in Arlington. If he can win four of those games, I think they'll be looking pretty good come the end of the year. And to wrap up this SEC talk for now anyway, Corey, I got a question about your guy, your quarterback, Tua Tagovailoa. How is he going to put together an encore performance after last year? After all of the records we saw him break, I don't know how he could rise to the level that so many expect him to play at consistently. I don't know if he's a guy that feels pressure because he seems to act pretty cool and calm and collected. But after last year, I mean, do you think he's more focused on getting that championship ring, or do you think he feels more pressure to be that first quarterback taken off the board for the 2021 draft or 2020 draft?
I don't think he feels pressure to be the number one quarterback taken off the NFL draft, because that's not the type of person Tua is. He's selfless and not selfish. And Nick Saban has encouraged him and said his late season struggles a year ago were due to injuries, possibly him not being in great playing shape coming off those injuries, and forcing the football. That's one thing. I don't care who the offensive coordinator is, whether it's Dables, whether it's Loxley, whether it's Sarkisian, you have to make great decisions with the football. Now, we've seen Tua be able to squeeze the football in tight windows, something he did an outstanding job in for the first 10 football games for the University of Alabama. So that's something we know Tua can do, and he's throwing to four guys who are possibly going to be playing in the NFL at the wide receiver position. So I get excited talking about Tua and the possibilities. Whether he's handing the football off, the bottom line is he has to make great decisions with the football, doesn't need to force things. He can take my bad only once before he gets in Nick Saban's doghouse, and he has to realize some of those windows that he was throwing in. The good thing for Tua, he's throwing to those same wide receivers, with the exception of Irv Smith Jr., a dynamic, again, four possible wide receivers in the NFL that Alabama has that Tua's throwing to. So he knows those guys. He's comfortable with those guys. I think that's going to be a benefit for Tua regardless of who the play caller is.
I'd like to know, just as a game, let's say Corey LeBounty lines up at quarterback for Alabama week one against Duke. You got Ruggs, you got Judy, you got
Devontae Smith.
Yeah, Devontae Smith. How many yards do you think you throw for? If Corey LeBounty in 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks from now, lines up at quarterback, I'm saying with those receivers and playing against Duke, I think I could get the ball out fast. Now, I don't think the ball would actually leave my hand very quickly, but I would certainly move as fast as I could. I think I could get 125 yards passing.
Dalton, I'm going to say right now, every time I throw it up, Henry Ruggs' vertical is unbelievable. Jerry Judy, we all know the phenomenal speed and the great hands he has. So, Dalton, I'm going to say I could probably throw for at least 250 sandlot style, just letting those guys just go and get it.
Now, my yards per attempt might be right around.
Now, see, that's what I was going with. I'll let them have the yak yards.
Yeah.
I'm just going to get them the football. I don't care how quick or how slow it is. I know they're going to come through for me.
It's all about the yard after catch and throwing it high enough for them to jump.
There you go.
I think Tua might put up 400 or 500 come game one. It'll be interesting. The whole season will be interesting, and I can't wait for the SEC to get kicked off. August 24th, Florida taking on Miami. When we come back, we'll wrap it up right here, Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
Recapping the weekend in sports and previewing the week ahead, this is FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night.
Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Orwig and Corey LeBounty. Thanks again to Cole Kublick from the SEC Network and Jocks 94.5 in Birmingham for joining us to talk SEC football earlier this hour. Corey, where can the fine folks that are listening to the show find you on Twitter?
At C-A LeBounty. That's C-A-L-A-B-O-U-N-T-Y.
And you can find me at Dalton Orwig on Twitter. And don't forget, get signed up now, the FM Talk 106.5 College Pick'em Challenge. We're doing it a little differently this year. So last year was the first year that we had this full-on station contest where you pick 10 games each week. ESPN picks the 10 games, and then you pick who's going to win each of those 10 games. And last year we played the confidence points way to play, where you put between 1 to 10 confidence points, 10 for the team you're most confident will win, 1 for the team you're least confident. This year we're changing it up a little bit. All you got to do is pick the winner outright, the outright winner for each of the 10 games, and then by the end of the season, whoever has the most correct games chosen will come into the FM Talk 106.5 studios and walk out with a nice trophy. And also, we're putting together a nice little prize package, too. So you can sign up right now, facebook.com/FM Talk 106.5. The link is listed there. And I'll also put it up on my Twitter page as well. Corey and I, we were just going through the ESPN today, put out the top 50 college football players in the nation for 2019. And it's sad to see. You know, I think Alabama's starting to lose their fastball. Only 10 of the 50 players are Alabama Crimson Tide players in the top 50 players in the nation. I mean, how is that fair?
Dalton, I mean, it just goes to speak on the depth and the competition. Iron sharpens iron at the University of Alabama when you play for Nick Saban.
You got Terrell Lewis. He's ranked 48th. I'll try to speed through this so I can get all the Alabama players in. Najee Harris, they put at 43 on the list. Trevon Diggs at 42 on the list. Henry Ruggs the third at 38th on the list. More Alabama players coming up here. Let's see. Anfernee Jennings, they rank the 31st best player in the nation. Above him for Alabama, you have Raekwon Davis, ranked 25th in the nation. Jaylen Waddle, one of those four receivers that are coming back, he's 24th in the nation. Dylan Moses, they've got ranked 22nd best player in the nation. You go up a little bit further here as we scroll. There's an Auburn player, Derek Brown, coming in at number 17 on the list. And then at number 11, a guy we know well here, Jalen Hurts, former Alabama player, who's now with the Oklahoma Sooners. They've got him ranked 11th. And I'll just go through the top 10 right now. Justin Ross, who's entering his sophomore season as wide receiver for Clemson. They have him as the 10th best player in the nation. The defensive lineman Chase Young with Ohio State. Seems like they always have a pro-ready guy, at least one or two on the line. And ESPN has him ranked as the 9th best player in the nation. The Clemson running back Travis Etienne, they have ranked 8th. The Oregon quarterback Justin Herbert, who Auburn's going to get a good look at in just over 2.5 weeks, he's ranked 7th. Jonathan Taylor, the running back from Wisconsin, the 6th best player in the nation. Quarterback from Georgia, Jake Fromm, number 5. The safety from LSU, Grant Delpit, number 3. And then the highest I've seen a receiver ranked in a long time, Jerry Jeudy, coming in as the 3rd best player in the nation. And if you wanted to take a guess, who do you think number 2 and number 1 are?
Well, you know, I know Jerry Jeudy being the Blitnikoff winner. You definitely have to go with him. And I love Tua. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's who I'm going to go with regardless of top 10.
Yeah, you got Tua at number 2, the 2nd best player in the entire nation. And number 1, according to ESPN, is Trevor Lawrence.
Well, you know, that's a great top 10, Dalton. But I tell you what, man, all those guys are going to be legally and properly equipped, unlike Antonio Brown, who tried to sneak in with his 10-year-old shoot Air Advantage helmet. Yeah. That the NFL said, no sir, you're gonna play with the type of helmet that's up to date. And that was a pretty interesting story this week.
Yeah, I mean, we really didn't think things would get much more weird than the frostbite story from last week. You know, there were initially videos coming out of Antonio Brown catching bricks while he was wearing some, I'm sure, like $3,000 shoes. And then he posted a photo of his feet, and a lot of people were like, wow, that's what happens when you work out wearing dress shoes. Turns out that he just got into a cryotherapy chamber in France wearing the wrong equipment. And now he's saying he might quit football over this whole helmet rule.
He rescinded it today. He's going to play. He's going to play for the Oakland Raiders if he's going to put on that new helmet. I mean, the science and technology behind the helmet, he's going to put on the new helmet.
I'm just hoping he drops a little bit in the fantasy football drafts, because I'll take him.
Scoop him up.
I'll take him. Only for 1 year. I'll get him as a one-year rental, but I think Antonio Brown will put up some big numbers this year. And speaking of putting up big numbers, we'll be back next week for another edition of Sports Night right here on FM Talk 106.5.